I'm going to read a short story which has the voice of two men, Sam and Paddy, or Paddy and Sam, because they appear in that order. And they are retired workers from the building trade. Paddy was like a seedy old pigeon himself, grey, gentle, calling the birds to him. He had time on his hands, carried crusts of bread for them in orange plastic bags, festooning the handlebars of the bicycle he pushed from his flat opposite the little park, Duncan Terrace Gardens. A broad tarmac path wove down its length, huge trees on either side, so some benches remained in shade, even in high summer. But mostly he preferred sitting in the sun, especially on fine spring mornings like this, cherry trees coming into flower, willows blushing green. Other old men congregated there too, some of them matey, talking or wanting to share his bench, in loving memory of Mum and Dad, Olga and Harry Weatherby, 1913 to 2006. Others preferred their own company and a read of the racing news. There was a betting shop nearby, and on days the gyro arrived, they'd drop in for a flutter on the horses. "Need a bit for a bit of excitement," his old friend Sam said. He came along mid-morning when the others had drifted off. Sam and Paddy sat together on the bench, watching the pigeons fight over crusts, not talking much, the odd comment about a lame bird. "Poor old blighter, one good leg and a stump for t'other." Or a pushy male with puffed up feathers pursuing a female. "He's got an hope." It was companionable, watching the pigeons, steely grey town birds mixing with their paler, pink-breasted country cousins. Paddy didn't need excitement from the horses, and most of his pension gyro was spent on food of one sort or another. There were always special offer leaflets in the dingy hallway of his flats. He got quite adventurous. After the pizza, he tried Indian curries, then Thai. Then there was that Afghan place down the road. Huge servings of lamb stew with a bowl of rice for a fiver. He went once a week when it wasn't busy. The menu never changed. Then there were the loaves of bread picked up cheap from Tesco's as they neared their sell-by date. He'd make toast for breakfast and cut off the crusts. His teeth didn't want the fight. And of course the pigeons needed their share, as poor Rose had always said, although in the end it had been a struggle to push her wheelchair into the gardens, even after the council moved them to the ground floor flat from the old Elia Street terraced house. That had been council too, but after they left, it was done up. Proper inside bathroom instead of the toilet under the stairs by the back door, and a bowl in the sink for washing. Paddy remembered taking his turn with Rose's other lodgers when he came from Ireland to find work. He sent money home to his old parents each week. He went back once when his dad died, but found his mum so far gone her memories couldn't separate him from his six brothers. She called him by each of their names. They were far flung, America, Australia. Paddy didn't know. They were not a letter-writing family. He married Rose when the IRA bombing campaign in the 1970s made it unwise to open your mouth with an Irish accent. She was angry for him when he told her of the abuse at work, even on building sites where half the labourers were Irish. The industry couldn't do without them. She asked him if he'd feel safer if he married an English woman. He remembered saying, "Who'd have me?" Then hearing her laugh gently, "You men, do you never notice?" It was a funny way to start, but they liked looking after each other. She was quite a bit older and looked after him almost like the child she never had. But as her rheumatic joints took over, it was his turn. Eventually he gave up work. The council were very helpful, telling them about allowances for carers. He missed his Rose when she died, but it was hard work at the end. lifting her and all that. Couldn't do it now. Now he had only himself to look after, and the pigeons. Sam had bumped into Paddy one day a few months back, saw his old workmate sitting on a bench, surrounded by pigeons, looking so content that he had the idea of coming by again to pass the time of day. It became a habit. Around noon, kids from the nearby sixth form college would start drifting in. Some of the girls wore muslin scarves, but that didn't stop them sitting on a bench very close to boyfriends. "Look at that," Paddy would say, "cooing like pigeons." Sam would laugh and change the subject. Courtship was a painful idea, bringing back memories of how he'd landed himself with a nagging wife. The gardens were an escape from Mabel. Paddy always seemed pleased to see him, and his eyes lit up when the flask of tea was pulled out. Sam didn't tell Mabel. She would have laughed scornfully. "Tea and sympathy, eh?" She was always coming up with funny sayings. He didn't know where she got them from, or what they meant, apart from being a put-down. She didn't need phrases for that. Just the way she breathed was enough to remind him of her subterranean anger at him, for reasons he could never fathom. Not having children maybe started it, long ago. Now here was Paddy, this bright spring morning, in the middle of his flocking flock of birds. Sam edged through them to reach the bench. "Nice day, bit of a nip in the air." Then the tea, drinking in turn from the flask's plastic cup. Paddy first, he was the guest. He started sipping, then put down the half-finished cup between them, coughing, trying to say something. Sam turned to him, saw beads of sweat in the stubble above his lip. Then he lurched forward and fell onto the tarmac, scattering the pigeons. That's where the kids from the college found them, a man on the ground, another pulling at his arm, trying to get him up. The girls giggled. A boy ran forward. "What's up?" Sam looked up helplessly. "Dunno, he just fell off the bench." One of the watching youngsters took out her mobile. "I'll call 999. They hung round till the ambulance came, keeping a distance from the fallen figure and the old man kneeling beside him. "They'll be here soon, Paddy. Don't worry, you'll be fine." Then sirens, flashing blue lights, and a shouted, "Where is he?" The ambulance bumped over the tarmac path, steered round the flowerbed and stopped by the bench. They loaded Paddy onto a stretcher and carried it into the vehicle. Sam peered in, watching as they checked his pulse, took his blood pressure. They handled him carefully, like a baby. Then turns to Sam. "Hop in, mate. We'll take him to UCH. Sam remembered going to outpatients at UCH once, press-ganged by Mabel, who'd been sent to have a blood sample taken for tests. "I might pass out," she wailed. "Then how could I get home?" He hadn't argued. She didn't faint, or even feel queasy. They went home in silence on the 73 bus. On her next trip to outpatients, she chose to go alone. The ambulance men took Paddy into the emergency room, asking Sam to wait on the seat outside. A receptionist called him over to her desk to ask questions, writing his answers on a white form, his name and address. But then to her, "And your friend's name?" he said, "Paddy," before pausing. He didn't know his other name or address, except that it was a flat opposite the gardens. He tried explaining to the young woman, but she seemed to find his rambling stories about how they met confusing. She could pluck nothing from them that helped her fill out the form. Giving up, she fetched him a cup of tea from the machine. He didn't have any money. She said the doctor would be back soon with news of his friend. He should just wait on that seat. Sam sat for a long time, watching stretcher cases carried into the emergency room, friends and relatives being questioned by the receptionist, white-coated figures coming and going with files under arm. The tea had warmed him, but he was beginning to feel hungry, to wonder how he would get home. He'd felt in his pocket for his bus pass, but it wasn't there. A white-coated figure stood in front of him. "Mr. Sam?" "Yes?" "Your friend Sean will have to stay in hospital. He's had a stroke and we need to assess him." "Sean's not my friend," he said thankfully. "Must be one of them others come in today. Me friend's Paddy, he's Irish, you see." Then the white coat pulled out a crumpled paper. Sam saw it was a gyro. The white coat explained. This was in his pocket, made out to Sean Flanagan. "I think that's your friend, but may better make sure. Come and see him." Sam was frightened being taken into the emergency room. There were cubicles along one side. The white coat led him to one and pulled back the curtain. Was this Paddy? This still form lying in a hospital gown, stamped property of UCH, face covered by a plastic mask, tubes from his arm connected to a bag of fluid hooked on the frame beside the bed, other tubes trailing from under the sheet. Yes, it was him. Sam recognised the right hand missing half a finger from that accident on the building site years ago. The white coat led Sam back into the waiting room, told him to phone the hospital next day. "Here's the phone number to call and Sean's hospital number. Just tell them that and you'll be put through to the ward. Maybe tomorrow you can visit him." Sam pushed the paper into his pocket beside the flask. He'd forgotten to replace the cup, but the screw cap was still there. Perhaps he'd look for the cup on the way home. And what about the bike? Paddy would ask about that. Sam decided to walk home. It wasn't that far. A straight route along the main road, past Houston, then King's Cross, and up Pentonville Road. Steep climb to the top of the hill, then down to the Angel Cross for a crossroads, where he'd be almost at the gardens and could walk through them. If the bike was there, he could wheel it back to his flat. But maybe not. He'd have to explain everything to Mabel, including Paddy's change of name. But then she didn't know about his friend, and she'd blame him for one thing or another, or everything, as usual, when all he wanted was to sit quiet and eat his dinner. Next day, he waited until Mabel went shopping to phone the hospital. They gave him a runaround. He had to hang on for so long that he feared Mabel would be back and there'd be endless questions. They gave him the name of the ward, then another hang on while he was put through. The nurse who took the call was confused when he asked about Paddy, then asked for the hospital number before saying brusquely, "Still in a coma, better to leave it a day or so. He may improve. With strokes you never know." It was late morning by the time Sam made it to the gardens. The kids from the college were already there, had taken possession of Paddy's bench, seemed not to notice anything different, didn't recognise Sam or ask questions about the ambulance. The bike was gone, probably nicked the day before by one of the boys from the estate. Sam walked along the path, thinking of Paddy, wondering when he'd be back, feeding the pigeons, giving shape to the day. The gardens weren't the same without him. Then he saw pieces of paper pinned to some of the trees. Notification of felling. The following day when he phoned the hospital, he asked for the ward, then gave Paddy's patient number, adding, "I call him Paddy." "Sure," came the gentle reply. Sam heard the Irish accent, was comforted, more so when the nurse continued. "He seems a bit better. Trying to talk, names of people. Seeing you might help." Sam found his bus pass, slipped the flask of tea in his pocket, and walked past the gardens on his way to the bus stop. The gates were locked, a notice fastened to them. Duncan Terrace Gardens Improvement Works. Tree fellers had started. Limbs lay across the paths, waiting to be fed into the log shredding machine already screeching away. Not a pigeon in sight. "Mr. Flanagan, Paddy, here's a friend to see you," said the Irish nurse as they reached the bed. Sam was relieved to find her on duty. Paddy was still hooked up to those tubes, but the mask was gone, and his eyes were open. "There now, take this chair and sit beside him," said the nurse. And when she spoke, Sam saw a flicker of recognition pass across Paddy's lopsided face as he struggled to talk. A slurred, "Rose?" followed by a mumbling he couldn't make out. Sam looked hopelessly at the nurse, who was smiling at Paddy, saying, "No, I'm not Rose, but here's your friend Sam. I'll leave you two together. If you need me, I can come over. I'll be at the desk." Sam didn't know what to do. Talking was not much in his line, conversation not being what made their friendship, if that was the right name for the shared park bench and the flask of tea, the pleasure of watching pigeons and people. And here was Paddy, sicker than a one-legged pigeon. He took the hand lying limply on the bed between both of his and rubbed it. "There, there. Oh man, you'll be all right. That nurse is a kind girl." Paddy tried to smile, moved his good hand across to the paralysed one, not sure if this new face was his father's, and would his mother come back soon to look after him? Then Rose floated into his mind, but she was crippled in her wheelchair. He couldn't help her. It was her turn now. She could have a meal ready when he got back from work. He closed his eyes and gave up, slipping back into dark forgetfulness. It was too much work shifting these people, shifting piles of lumber, moving things from one side of the building to the other. It was cold. He wanted a cup of hot tea. Tea from a flask. Where was that? And the pigeons? They flew away. He slept. And dreamt of a cottage with an earth floor. Children milling around. Him the baby of the family. They spoiled him. Told him endless stories. Then went away, saying there was no work in Kerry. "Good of you to visit," said the nurse as Sam passed her on his way out. "Come back tomorrow, it might help him. I can't make out who this Rose is, do you know? And then there's Mary, but maybe that's the Virgin. I think Rose was his wife, died a while back. I didn't know him then." "How did you know him?" "Met clearing bomb sites left over after the war. Him just arrived from Ireland, no work here, there. London, there was plenty. All that new housing. Those tall blocks they're pulling down now. But after that, didn't see him for years, till we bumped into each other in the park. Didn't know he lived local. My pa came over from Ireland too. Did all manner of labouring jobs. But after a while he sent for us. Does Paddy have children?" "No, no more than I do." The image of Mabel came to Sam. He shook his head to clear it, decided it was time to leave. He didn't want any questions about himself. "Must be getting along," he muttered. "See you tomorrow." When he walked past the gardens next day, Saturday, no men were at work, but there were more changes. The lock gates were reinforced by metal panels, and peering through the railings, he could see the log shredding machine and a small caterpillar track digger penned in a wire-fenced area. There was yellow mesh staked round the big trees, and great holes in the ground where others had been, as huge and painful as the gum of a pulled-out tooth. Paddy wouldn't like all this. Sam wouldn't tell him. But Paddy was not in a state for conversation. Oxygen masked back, and he moaned from time to time, raising his good arm, trying to pull at the mask from his face, occasionally succeeding. "Share," he mumbled to Sam as Sam sat beside him. "Too hard." The nurse came up to replace the mask. "There now, don't fret," she crooned, putting Paddy's wandering hand into Sam's to restrain it. That seemed a comfort. He drifted off, but into a sleep that seemed barely restful. Rose was on his lips again, and other names Sam could not make out. The paths in the garden had been ripped up by noon on Monday when Sam walked by, the benches tipped over on their backs, legs encased in lumps of tarmac. There were great slabs of broken paving piled on the flowerbed, a monstrous rockery. As he walked into the ward, he saw the curtains were drawn round Paddy's bed. They billowed occasionally as somebody moved round inside, then parted, and the Irish nurse appeared, carrying a clipboard. But it was her face that Sam was looking at, signalling to him, warning him not to come closer.